Black heart, gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Greetings and welcome to episode 8 of Blackheart Gold Podcast. I am Hawkeye State, joined as ever by Oops Pal Surprise. Oops, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, sir.
How you doing today?
I cannot complain. How about you? I want to hear more about you.
I'm spectacular, and I'll tell you why, because it's 4:30 and I'm not in my office anymore. joining us today for the podcast is Brian Cook, founder and editor of MGO blog, contributor at the Sporting blog, and as of this afternoon, hater of the spread punt. Brian, hey.
I've always hated the spread punt, actually. I've just come out of the closet about it recently.
You're just openly hateful now?
Yes. It's a step forward for me. I came through the door, and now I'm really who I am.
I told Oops Pal this afternoon that post about the 2003 spread punt debacle at Kinnick Stadium put a big fat smile on my face.
the really sad part of that was possibly Lloyd Carr's second best team behind the 97 national championship team, and they lost against Oregon and Iowa basically because of special teams debacle, and then that guy immediately went into real estate. Who was put in charge of it was like, who quit coaching? Like, who wouldn't? I mean, I would be gone.
That was unquestionably the strangest game I've ever watched at Kinnick. Michigan came out and put it to us early. I think we ran the ball like three straight plays for -2 yards each of our first two offensive series, and I think Michigan was up, I want to say 10-0 at that point. And for the first time since Ferentz had taken over, they basically said fuck it and threw out the playbook and just chucked it deep. And that combined with some absolutely atrocious punt coverage. Basically,
it wasn't even the coverage. Two of those things got blocked.
Yeah.
And run back.
Yeah. That basically won the game for Iowa. We had no business winning that game.
No. Yeah, totally argued. Navarre threw for what, 389 that day?
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Yeah, something like that. So Michigan had like a 200-yard yardage advantage. So that was definitely a game that Michigan kind of gave away. But they've taken away a couple this year. So
yeah.
I'm getting back on the even side of that ledger.
So Brian, what do you think of the Tate Forcier era so far? Better yet, actually, let's get before we get into the meta. How's he doing as far as the shoulder goes?
He has been limited in practice. They said that he would be limited Monday and Tuesday, but would play this weekend. Obviously played basically the entire game last weekend and looked fine doing it. Didn't look quite as great as maybe he did against Notre Dame, but he wasn't far off. So I think he's basically healthy.
And are you? I'm assuming you're pleased with the return so far.
Yeah, he's an exciting little bastard to have on your team. he reminds me of a weird combination of Drew Tate, who I've always brought up Drew Tate, and then Chad Henne, because Henne was the same sort of unflappable, like it's the fourth quarter and I have the exact same heart rate I would when I'm asleep kind of like attitude, and he has that sort of ability not to drop off in the fourth quarter that Henne did too.
Has Robinson's play decreased steadily since the first week? I mean, I haven't been able to watch a whole lot of Michigan, but what I've caught so far, I've seen less and less of him. Is that just a perception of or is it really actually happening?
Against Indiana, he got three or four drives, and one of them was a touchdown drive that he managed to get. And he only got in one series against State, but that game was so weird because State had this 130-yard touchdown drive that they kept getting penalties on. It took up 10 minutes in the second quarter. But Michigan only had three possessions in the first half, and I think that really like hampered their ability to get Robinson in, because you want to give him like a series or two in the first half, after, you know, but they just didn't have that opportunity. So I think you might see him a little bit against Iowa, but it's clear at this point that against teams with, you know, good, solid defenses that can handle his athleticism, he's pretty limited as a freshman.
How bad of an issue is this issue with the center? With the, what is it, broken foot? Because I, watching the shotgun snaps, whoever you've got in there now instead looks awful.
Yeah, well, they moved over David Moosman to center, and a lot of those botched shotgun snaps against Indiana weren't necessarily his fault. They were like freeze plays where they hadn't quite gotten that down, because when people jump the snap, Michigan wants to catch them offside. So what was happening is that like the quarterback would be looking to the sidelines, some player would jump offside, and Moosman would snap it, and the quarterback wouldn't get it, and they wouldn't get the call. So I don't think they're all that bad, but the loss of Mulk has been pretty bad, mostly because it's brought in either Perry Dorrestein or John Ferrara on the right side of the line, and Michigan had a lot of trouble moving Michigan State's defensive tackles last week, and they're obviously missing him quite a bit. So that's a major hit to the run game.
Now, I think unquestionably the Achilles heel for this team, the offense seems to be clicking on all cylinders more or less all the time, except last week Michigan State apparently did something to keep you from running the ball so effectively. What exactly was it?
I looked at the film, and part of it was Mulk being out, and they just couldn't block anybody on the right side of the line, so that allowed them to do a lot of stunts and that kind of stuff. And then part of it was just that I think Michigan State, under Mark D'Antonio, prepares an awful lot for Michigan, and they kind of had a warm-up game against Central, which runs the same offense. They didn't do that well against Central, but they obviously had enough time to fix whatever had gone wrong, and so they did a job that I don't think, I'm hoping it isn't going to get replicated the rest of the year. The same thing actually kind of happened last year. In the last six games, Michigan's rushing offense was actually pretty good, but the one game of those five that they didn't do at least a credible job in was Michigan State. So, you know, either that's a sign that without Mulk, Michigan can't really run the ball, or it's just a sign that State somehow has Rodriguez as a number. For the rest of the year, I'm hoping it's the latter.
We would know a little bit about rivalries taking on that form. So, about Michigan's offense, though, for our readers who don't really watch a whole lot of Wolverines football, explain it in seven words or less, the new Rodriguez Michigan offense.
You read the backside end and do what he doesn't defend.
That's way more than seven words, but all right.
That is way more than seven words.
That was like Crime and Punishment.
That was more concise than it's ever been stated before, though. On the pages.
Now, I think the big question all season has been, not necessarily is the offense good, because I think it is, but is the offense good enough to make up for the fact that Greta Robinson is running your defense?
I think the better question is, can the offense make up for the fact that we have played no fewer than four walk-ons on defense, like on legitimate snaps this fall? So there's just not a whole lot of talent. So Mike Williams was a starting safety, got his ankle tweaked, and we replaced him with a walk-on. When Mouton got suspended, we replaced him with a walk-on. Brandon Graham's backup, who gets 20 to 30 snaps a game, is a walk-on. And then the second backup safety, both backup safeties are walk-ons. So there's no depth of talent, and when the defensive line gets tired out and somebody has to sub out, there's a big drop-off there. And the second cornerback is either Bubakar Sissoko, who has had no luck so far this year, or JT Floyd, who's a redshirt freshman and wasn't a very highly touted recruit. And then there's literally no one who's played after those guys. So it's like you can get a couple good recruits in, but if you don't know the system and if there's no one behind you in case you don't perform to expectations, you're just not going to have a very good defense.
So are you defending the GERG?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. Just because Michigan's had, three defensive coordinators in 3 years, and you can tell that the people on defense don't really know what they're doing. And honestly, I haven't seen a defense that's this talentless at Michigan in a long time. I mean, there's Warren and Graham, who are probably going to be first-round NFL draft picks. And then after that, there's a couple good guys on the defensive line, but they're very young. There's no upperclassmen on the defensive line except for Graham, and it's just, it's hard when you've got two guys and then you're scrambling everywhere else.
Sure. Now, as far as the defensive scheming goes, you know, at Iowa, it's pretty vanilla. Like, if you're looking from behind the quarterback, it's always going to be Claiborne, then Klug, then Ballard, then Benz across the line. Is Michigan the same way, or are we going to see a lot of mix-ups and matchups, like, you know, who goes against who? Like, is it going to be Bulaga against Graham the entire time, or are we going to see guys moving around to different parts of the line, flipping, or what can we expect with that?
Well, they'll flip from a side to side based on the strength of the formation. Iowa will determine whether Bulaga goes up against Graham the whole game, because they'll change based on the alignment of the offense. So if they want to, they can get Graham on Bulaga. I mean, Michigan doesn't even have a nickel package. They have spent the entire year with three linebackers on the field and four defensive linemen. And, I mean, one of the linebackers is Stevie Brown, who was a safety last year, so it's not quite as susceptible to pass as that might sound. But that's just a lack of depth from a defense. Again, they cannot do situational substitutions. But you're going to see basically a 4-3 under the whole game, and they'll do some exotic stuff on passing downs, but it's going to be the same personnel.
I've heard something like that before. Iowa's been running this bizarro 3-4 or even 3-5 against the spread, and I think might see that a little bit this week, but that seems to be more against passing than rushing. But it'll be typical, you know, 4-3 cover 2, I think, from us.
Yeah.
My next question was just going to be, if Zoltán Mesko's name wasn't so awesome, would we hear so much about him?
No. I mean... That's pretty obvious, right? So, but he is an excellent punter. I mean, Michigan finished last year, I think, sixth in net punting, and they're in the top 10 again this year. So he's worth some of the hype, but his name's Zoltán Mesko, so that's why you have heard of him, the Iowa fan. So I don't know what your punter's name is. So
it's not as cool as Zoltán. That's right.
Our punter is named Quentin McThunderpants.
Oh, that's close.
Yeah, and he downs everything at the one. No, he's Ryan Donahue, who will inevitably finish right behind Mesko in All Big Ten voting this year.
Inevitably.
Probably, yeah. Although Michigan State's punter is also in the top 10, which is so there will be quite a fierce punter battle. Don't let SEC speed fool you. It's Big Ten punting that wins games.
punt to win, baby. And of course, the arm punter Terrell Pryor gets in the mix too. There, so.
I can't believe he wrested that title away from Ben Chappelle. I thought that was Indiana's for life, basically.
That guy shredded Michigan, which is not good.
Oh yeah, that's right.
That's the second straight year that Michigan's had a random quarterback shred him, wasn't it? Siler from Purdue, from Purdue last year.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a quarterback. He had been moved to running back 2 weeks earlier. So,
yeah.
I mean, that didn't go as well as we had hoped, that whole thing.
We should tell our viewers, you're planning on being in attendance this weekend, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I'm driving up to Iowa for the first time ever.
Ever?
Ever. Well, I mean, I've driven through Iowa, but I've never driven to Iowa with the intention of staying there. For anything more than like a night in a hotel room in Des Moines.
To tell you the truth, Brian, I never drove here with the intention of staying here either, but, you know, 20 years later, here I am.
So
yeah.
Yeah. You were driving 20 years ago, dude?
I'm old. I got a license at 9.
It was a different era back then.
It was. But Brian will... We'll let you go with a prediction. What do you think for this weekend?
I think something like Iowa 23, Michigan 14.
Yeah, I can see that.
Oops, pal, what are you thinking?
Well, when I was appearing on Brian's podcast, which really ought to give you an indication of how insulated and incestuous this whole Big Ten blogger situation is. Well, it was literally yesterday we're talking about this very thing. I think it's going to be something along the lines of 27-17, 24-14, Iowa, something like that. Like, you know, obviously, I'd love it if Iowa won by 40, and it's theoretically possible. And I think the same goes the other way, too. You could see Michigan run 50 points up on the scoreboard. It's unlikely. But I think all the evidence points to Iowa being a little bit better at putting points on the board than Michigan, even with Stansy balls flying all over the place. So, yeah, I'd say 27-17.
I think it's going to be a little bit higher scoring than the two of you do, but I'm not going to disagree on the outcome. I'm thinking like 31-28, 34-28. I think Michigan's
really?
Going to score
wow.
some points. But after watching enough of Michigan this year, I think there's no doubt they'll put some points on the board and they'll give some up. And I'm guessing Michigan will get the obligatory one touchdown on defense that everybody gets against Rick Stansy.
I think if Michigan gets that touchdown on defense, that's going to be enough to tip it the other way. That's a big swing play right there. I'm not counting on that in my prediction. So.
Oh, you should be. Believe me.
If they get the Stansy giveaway, I think this one's going down to the wire. So.
Yeah, I think that might well be the case. I do think Michigan probably covers the 8 points.
You think?
I think. I think giving Iowa more than a touchdown against a team that good is probably dangerous, but I think Iowa pulls it out yet closer than they think.
Gotta keep in mind that Michigan's been outgained in all three of their games against non-MAC opponents, so they might not be that good at this point. They might just have had a couple of 4CA-led escapes, so, you know.
Well, but you have to account for that at this point now, too, though, because he's done it three straight weeks.
Yeah, well, I guess the point is more that the numbers add up to something. Michigan is something other than a 4-1 team, so, you know. I'm not going into it with huge hopes, but, you know, it should be a half-competitive game, which is all enough reason for me to come out.
Excellent.
Well,
we're looking forward to it. Sir.
Absolutely. We'll see you on Saturday, and thanks for appearing on the podcast.
Yeah, I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
All right, take care, Brian.
And episode 8 is in the books. I'd like to thank Brian Cook for joining us. Wish him and his team the absolute worst of luck this weekend. A reminder that Blackheart Gold Tailgate is set to begin Saturday morning at the Myrtle Lot, which is right near the law school on the big hill near the Come and Go. Need any directions or have any questions, details will be posted on Blackheart Gold Bands Thursday afternoon. Be sure to join us there, and we'll see you next week. Hawkeye State out.